and welcome to the Well Read Podcast, a bi-weekly discussion on books and reading. I'm Hallie.
And I'm Anne.
And we are librarians with the Beaufort County Library in South Carolina. This week, we are going to be talking about some fun books to read as you celebrate the holidays. Anne, what do you think the appeal is to read a holiday book at this time of year?
People want cozy during this time of year, and there's nothing more, like, there's something really comforting about this type of book. Like, you know it's going to happen, you know that they're kind of predictable, but there's something appealing about that when in other book forms and other times of the year, I probably wouldn't like that, and I'd probably make fun of it. So it's, there's just something that is, like, I'm willing to suspend my disbelief a lot during the holidays and to just think, oh, well, this feels good. And I like, I really love reading seasonal books, like anything that sort of evokes the feeling of whatever season, and that just kind of carries down through Christmas books and holiday books. So what do you think?
Well, I think the same thing. And I also think that personally, I'm always really busy around the holidays and I don't have as much time to spend reading. And so when I actually do sit down and read, I always find my brain is still kind of racing from everything that's going on. And so anything complex or that takes a lot of focus, I have a hard time reading. But some, lots of times holiday books are a little bit simpler storylines.
Yeah, they're light.
They're light. Really light, yeah. And so they're just kind of easy to slip into and out of as you read. And again, like you said, I really like that it evokes the feeling. Sometimes if I'm not in the spirit of the season, it can help get me into the spirit, particularly here where our weather can be a little bit warmer. It can be fun to picture snowy scenes and stuff like that. And I should say, I think we probably should say we both celebrate Christmas. So I think we're both drawn to books that talk about Christmas over the other holidays that fall around this time of year. But
and it's also really hard to find non-Christmas books. As a librarian, I've looked for them.
It's difficult. More people need to be writing. In fact, I think Jennifer Weiner wrote a Hanukkah book because she, a couple, or a short story maybe, like a novella, because she put out that, I think it was Jennifer Weiner, somebody put out a call that said, tell me good Hanukkah books, and there just weren't that many, so she was like, well, then I'll write one.
Oh, that's really cool.
So I do want to read that, but it is hard. If you, if anyone who's listening has suggestions for good books about the other holidays that, that fall around this time that people celebrate other than Christmas, I would love to hear them, because it, there definitely seems to be a huge glut of Christmas books, and then very few that represent other religions and other celebrations.
We want to be well-rounded.
We do want to be well-rounded.
So we like to give things to other to people and know that we're giving things that are not just one perspective.
Exactly. So now, do you, I know you said you like to read the seasonally, but do you think you could read these books year-round?
I probably wouldn't enjoy it nearly as much. I'm sure I think I've had to because I've had advanced copies of books and they expire at a certain date. And so obviously publishers are trying to get these out well before Christmas so people have a chance to get to them when Christmas actually happens. So I can imagine it if I kind of needed a dose of good feelings, I can maybe see doing that, but it really isn't my style. I probably would feel like there's just something inherently wrong in reading a Christmas book in July. So that's when I want like hot, swampy.
Last year, I think it was last year or the year before, I started reading a book prior to Christmas that was Christmas focused. And then after Christmas, I just stopped reading it because I was like, well, Christmas is over. Can't get back into that book.
Maybe I'll try again this year. No value whatsoever.
All right, so tell me what your first suggestion is.
Okay, it's Blue Christmas by Mary Kay Andrews,
which you stole from me.
I did. I stole most of your picks, but I don't feel sorry one bit. I'm not in the spirit of giving. So this is, like Hallie said, this is a short book, which is very typical for authors to release these kind of novella additions to popular series. So there's all kinds of people that do this. Janet Ivanovich does it. Anne Perry does it. It's just, you see these constantly coming into the library. So this is part of the Wheezy and Beebe series that Mary Kay Andrews writes. And they're all set in Savannah, which is really cool because we live very close to Savannah. So it has a good appeal for people that are in this area. And I felt like this book stands alone. There are definitely spoilers from earlier books in the series, but I hadn't read any of the previous books when I read this and I didn't really have any problems. I just didn't realize that they weren't, that they were things that had been issues in other books. But there isn't anything like where you don't get information that you have to have in order to understand this book. So the book centers around Wheezy Foley, who is an antique dealer in the Savannah Historical District, and she's trying to decorate her shop in the week before Christmas. And there's a contest that's going on within the Savannah Historical District that all the shop owners are creating these kind of special window displays to celebrate the holidays. So she's in particular trying to beat the snotty owners of a rival shop that are around the corner from her, and she's really struggling to come up with something. And I think that there's some really strict parameters on what she has to do with her window, and she just decides to throw them all out and goes with an Elvis theme. So she calls it Blue Christmas, and it has like 1950s retro decorations, which incidentally, I went to Graceland at Christmas time once. The decorations at Christmas there are fabulous because it's all of Elvis's original decorations. Oh my gosh. And they put them up every year.
That's insane.
Do yourself a favor and take a little road trip to Graceland and see this because it's incredible. So weird things start happening once she's done this, when she's got this window decorated. Some of her decorations are sabotaged, and she finds that things are going missing, and she's pretty convinced that there's someone in her shop at night, but she can't really prove it. So she's also feeling very unsure of her relationship with her boyfriend, Daniel, who's acting distant and moody, and she wants to make everything perfect for Christmas, and she really feels like everything is kind of falling apart around her. But of course, this is a Christmas story, so it's going to have a cute, cozy ending, and I was kind of shocked by how much I enjoyed this, because I read it for my book club last year, and I always pick a Christmas or like a holiday, so far just Christmas because that's all I can find. I pick like a short Christmas book that we do, and then we have sort of a holiday party, and we just have a short little discussion. And I was really shocked at how appealing this book was and how much we were able to talk about. The atmosphere is just so fun and so sweet, but not saccharine. Mm-hmm. So the setting is super fun. If you live in the Beaufort area, then you're very familiar with the Savannah district. And so there's a lot of things that she talks about in the book that are places you actually recognize, and lots of things that are very familiar to you. And I actually went down to Savannah that December after I read this and found the square where the story takes place. And so that was just, it was fun. It was really cool. I love when authors incorporate real places mm-hmm. into their books. It has a really good sense of humor and really fun details. And it's just the perfect like Sunday afternoon Christmassy read. So it's called Blue Christmas by Mary Kay Andrews. And it's a charming delight.
It is a charming delight. I love Mary Kay Andrews, particularly that set of books about those mm-hmm. characters. I think that they're just really fun.
Yeah.
My first one is The Best Christmas Pageant Ever by Barbara Robinson, and this is an oldie but a goodie. It's a classic. It's a children's book. I think I probably first read it in maybe the second or third grade. They made a movie out of it, but if you haven't read it, doesn't matter if you're a child or an adult, everybody should read this book. It's about the Herdman kids, who are basically the worst kids in the world, according to their little town that they live in. They lie, they swear, they smoke cigars, they steal. They're just total outcasts in the town. And everyone is stunned when they show up at the first rehearsal for the annual church Christmas pageant and decide that they are going to take part. And not only take part, they're basically going to take over, and they want to play all the roles, all the main roles. This causes a bit of a uproar in the church and the town, because all these people are, this is such a valuable story, and it's being tainted by the Herdmans taking over with the way they do things. But it's such a great story. Their interpretation of the Christmas story is hilarious. This is the first time they've really heard it. And so they think the wise men are spies. They decide that they're spies when they hear the story, and that somebody really needs to beat Herod up because he's awful. And then just the way of something that's so ingrained, if you celebrate Christmas, it's just sort of second nature, like, oh yeah, the story of Jesus and Mary and Joseph, and you just know it and you don't really question it, I mm-hmm. think. And so seeing it from the perspective of kids whose first time they're hearing it and how they question it and their interpretation is really fun. But it's also just such a sweet story because it's really about how the townspeople begin to understand the Herdmans. They've always been considered outcasts, but once they actually get to know them, they realize that they have value, I guess, is a way to say it. And so it's a really good message. It's so heartwarming and sweet and really true to life, I find, because when you don't know people, you can make assumptions about them based on how they act or how they look. Some people have a tendency to do that. And it's really a good message that you have to get to know people before you can make any sort of assumption about them at all. You shouldn't assume anything because you maybe don't know what the whole story mm-hmm. is. So it's just a whole new perspective on the Christmas story. And it's, if you can read this without crying at the end, I commend you, because I'm incapable of reading it without crying. It's just very sweet. And that is The Best Christmas Pageant Ever by Barbara Robinson.
I feel like when I was a kid, that was a very standard book.
I feel like it was too, and a TV movie. Right. I don't know if it still is, which is why I decided to talk about it. I don't know if it's fallen out of favor because it's a little bit older.
Yeah.
Because it was commonplace when I was growing up.
Right.
Everybody read the best Christmas pageant ever.
Right.
But I don't know if people still do. So that's why I wanted to talk about it.
Right. I don't feel like I've heard people talk about it in years and years, but I don't know. I hope people read it. It's a really, really fun book.
That's so sweet.
So my next pick is My True Love Gave to Me, and that's edited by Stephanie Perkins. This is an anthology of romantic holiday stories that are written by popular YA authors. So it includes one from Stephanie Perkins. There's one from Gail Forman, Matt De La Pena, Holly Black, Lainey Taylor, and our well-read podcast muse, Rainbow Rowell. And I think that Rainbow Rowell is sort of the draw to, like, she has the first book or the first story in the book, mm-hmm. and a lot, she's very, very popular right now. Mm-hmm. And so I think that I picked that up because I saw her name on it, but there's all kinds of great authors to discover in this. I definitely didn't know all of them. There were probably half of them that I was familiar with, mm-hmm. but I found all kinds of new people. I wanted to read all their books. So they all have this romantic thread that runs through the stories. There's definitely an emphasis on the romance of Christmas. But then the book also covers tons of holidays, which I really appreciated. There's definitely Christmas and Hanukkah that are represented, but there's also a New Year's Eve story. There's a winter solstice story. There's a Krampus story, which I loved because I like me some Krampus. So, which, as we were talking about earlier, it's really hard to find books that are not from this one Christmas perspective, mm-hmm. when you're talking about holiday books. And so I liked that. Obviously there's a lot of different traditions that are going on at this time of year, and I think especially teens maybe need to find things that represent them, mm-hmm. and aren't just making them go with whatever is the popular, mm-hmm. Or the mainstream. So I like that this is done for a YA book. Mm-hmm. Not only does it have a wide range of holidays, but also is a wide range of perspectives, mm-hmm. within the holidays. So there's a love story between two boys. There are interracial couples. There are stories of dealing with poverty. The stories take place in different parts of the country, which I thought was great because my Christmas memories involve cacti and luminarias, and you hardly ever see that for, like, everything is sleigh rides and stuff, right. And that's just not my experience. And so when I think about Christmas, I think about, you know, warm weather and tamales and things like that. And so it was really cool to see that in a book and to think there are other people that will feel sort of included in this.
Right.
And this book is definitely a very inclusive book for lots of people. The book blurb says that it's perfect for people that love made for TV holiday specials. And that is such an accurate description
true.
Of this.
Oh,
like, I wish I had cable just
love
so I could watch
Lifetime.
Them.
Oh, Netflix. Do you have Netflix?
Yes.
Or Hoopla. Now we have Hoopla. It's probably on there.
You're so right.
All those Hallmark Oh my gosh. I love them.
Oh my gosh.
Eat them up with a spoon.
I'm just going to binge on those and it'll be great. Adam is not looking happy about this.
Adam is not a fan of the Hallmark although, do you know if your wife is a fan of those? No. He's saying no. We're going to pull Adam into our podcast whether he likes it or not.
So I feel like reading these, it felt like having an Afghan on. It felt like hot chocolate. Mm-hmm. It felt like Twinkle Lights. Mm-hmm. And it was very comforting and very sweet. And I think I read this at Christmas at home last year, mm-hmm. and I just loved being able to sort of dip into this, yeah. as I could, because it's short. So there's lots of ways, even if you're busy, you can still just read a story at a time.
Right. Short stories are great at Christmas.
Yeah, definitely.
Right. Or holidays. Sorry.
Yeah.
What I liked about it too is that there's some realistic fiction and then some, mm-hmm. like Lainey Taylor is a fantasy writer.
Right.
And so there's some fantasy in there too. And it's fun.
Yeah. You're getting all kinds of things
of, yes,
in this.
In one book.
The title is My True Love Gave to Me, and that's edited by Stephanie Perkins.
All right, my second one is I Am Half Sick of Shadows by Alan Bradley, and is number 4 in the Flavia DeLuce Mysteries. And as we've talked about before, I absolutely have to read mystery series in order. But I do actually think that this one you could easily read out of order if you've not read the series yet. You could start with this one and then go back. There are some spoilers at the end about previous events, but it really is focused mainly on just the setting and place and the mystery of this book. So the series is about a precocious 11-year-old named Flavia DeLuce, who absolutely loves chemistry, particularly poisons. She has an interest in poisons. She has a little chemistry lab at her house. She lives in this old, crumbling English estate in the 1950s with her absent-minded father and her two older sisters, who they all live to drive each other insane, pretty much,
as
sisters do. Her mother is not in the picture anymore. She died long ago. And Flavia considers herself basically equally as smart as any adult around her in her orbit. And she has no problem inserting herself into any situation that interests her. And mostly any situation is going to be an investigation or a crime of some sort. And for a small village in England in the 50s, there are a lot of crimes and investigations that go on, as you would imagine.
Surprising number. Between her and Miss Marple. Yes, they are finding all kinds of things.
These English villages are just hotbeds of crime. So in this book, the family needs money, which is a recurring theme throughout the series. They have no money. They have this huge estate, but they have no money. And so in order to gain some cash, the father decides to rent out the house to a film company. And Flavia and her sisters are super excited because there's a big film star who will be staying there with them. And while they're there, the film crew puts on an impromptu performance of Romeo and Juliet to help raise money for the town church, because the town church needs a new roof. And so they decide that they will put on this performance and help raise money. And a huge snowstorm ends up stranding many of the villagers, as well as the crew, in the house in this grand estate. And they are stuck there for the night. And the next morning when they wake up, Flavia discovers that this huge film star has died overnight, has been murdered. So voila, here is a mystery to solve. And it's a locked room mystery. Of course, everybody was in the house. So, you know, your favorite kind. So somebody in the house had to have done it. So Flavia decides that she is going to solve the mystery of who killed the film star. But during this whole thing, there's also a kind of a side story where Flavia is trying to devise a glue so that when Saint Nick comes down the chimney, he'll get stuck, and she can prove to her sisters that he actually exists, which I love, because, you know, she's super precocious. Like, right. That's the word everybody uses about her. She's so precocious, but she's also still 11 years old.
Right.
And so she still believes... Oh, hide the kid.
Spoiler alert.
She believes in Santa Claus, as should we all. And so there's like the innocence mixed with the more adult thinking that she does, which I just think is a great combination. And she's super charming and funny and really quirky. And all the characters, you really come to these mysteries more for the characters and the mm-hmm. setting than the mysteries. I think the mysteries have a tendency to take a backseat to all of that, at
Definitely,
least for me.
Yeah.
But they're so much fun to read. Actually, I have a coworker who listens to them all and says that they're great to listen to. The narrator is fantastic. So like I said at the beginning, you don't necessarily have to read them all in order. So if you're in the mood for a holiday mystery and want to just pick this one up, I think that you could do that without a problem. And that is I Am Half Sick of Shadows by Alan Bradley.
I think that will be my holiday reading this Christmas.
Have you ever read the Flavia DeLuce?
I read the first one.
Okay.
And just I thought it was great, and
yes.
then got caught up in other stuff,
right.
and never went back to it.
Yeah.
And I really need to, because I so enjoy the first
yes.
one, and the setting is so fun, and the characters are so fun, and
so
it's,
charming. It's just
yeah, without being really sweet
right.
either. There's this kind of saltiness to
it
yes. that's really appealing.
Yes.
And it's exactly like you said. She loves chemistry. She loves these really dark things, mm-hmm. but then she's a little kid, and so
yeah.
there's all these sort of funny juxtapositions mm-hmm. that come up in the story that mm-hmm. are really just, you can't help but love.
Yeah.
So I'm excited to get back into that.
You'll have to let me know if you like it.
I will. I'm just telling you now.
All right, tell me your next one.
So my last book is The Lopsided Christmas Cake by Wanda E. Brunstetter and Jean Brunstetter. So Wanda Brunstetter, I have to give a little disclaimer. She is an ultra successful writer of Amish romances, which is a huge subgenre within the Christian fiction Christian fiction genre. I will say, though, that I became aware of her through my sister because she was making fun of the covers of her books. So I feel a little bit bad about this, kind of, because she has these hilarious book covers with people that look flummoxed on the cover, and that's just kind of hilarious to look at when you're picking out your books. And this is one of them. This has a very, very funny cover. But that's sort of what makes them charming and fun, that
right.
they're just so sweet, and
right.
they definitely kind of can veer into things where you're like, wow, that's really goofy. But mm-hmm. I think that it's done that Wanda E. Brunstetter writes them with very goodwill, and
right.
she's very invested in this community.
Yes.
She's not Amish herself, but her family history is comes from an
yeah.
Amish background, and I think her husband's family is Amish.
Yeah.
And so I read up on this because I was just very curious about her, and
right.
she, I guess, is known for doing intense research and doing just incredible amounts of research, and she's really widely respected for writing a very accurate portrayal of Amish life,
okay.
and so, which is really cool. And so that's what made me feel dumb and bad for thinking these covers are so goofy,
yeah.
because she's apparently very well-loved by the Amish
yeah.
community.
It sounds like she has a lot of respect for
yeah,
that
yeah,
community.
Yeah. So the book opens when twin sisters Thelma and Elma That's one of the details that is a little goofy. They find out that they've inherited their parents' house and their store after they were killed in an accident. And so they're both unmarried women in their 30s, and they have never lived away from their parents, but they're encouraged to take on this challenge, and they decide to move to this new Amish community in Indiana. I think they start out in Illinois, but they move to Indiana to start this new life. And so they're buying supplies in town, and Thelma finds a flyer that's advertising a charity baking auction to help the community with medical expenses. And another side note, I think that you find out all kinds of things about the Amish community that I had never known. And so one of those things is that they don't have medical insurance, which I guess made sense when I thought about it, but I had never put that together. And so they pay for a lot of their medical expenses for members of the community that are in need of them through auctions like this and selling things. So there's just all kinds of interesting little details to glean from these books. So the sisters decide that they're going to enter their grandmother's famous Christmas cake. But as they're baking it, it goes horribly wrong. They're cooking on a wood stove for the first time, and the cake just is terrible. And so they don't have time to make a new one. They're doing this the night before of the auction, and they just have to take it with them. So once they're there, they find out that they actually have to demonstrate the recipe on stage as well. And that goes horribly wrong. They're not prepared for this at all. So they kind of bumble their way through it, but their personalities while on stage attract the attention of two men who decide to bid on this cake together just so they can get to know these sisters. So as this is kind of in the fall when this is happening. And so as Christmas draws closer, they're getting to know these two Amish gentlemen, and the romance is starting to blossom between them, but we have to read the book to find out what happens and if it's going to last. And it's charming. They definitely come off as very formal, and it's language that to me seemed almost old-fashioned. Mm-hmm. Like I was reading a maybe 19th century book. So if this isn't your normal style, then it will definitely come off that way. But I was totally up for that in a Christmas book. It felt really fun to read right now. And I definitely encourage people to read Amish romance if they're looking for something that's very clean and very sweet. Right. They're very, we've talked about Miss Reed and Jan Karen before. These are in that same sort of genre of gentle fiction. I give these out at the library all the time. Mm-hmm. They fly off the shelves. I don't know about your mm-hmm. branch, but they're crazy, crazy popular because people want the relationship side of romance, but they don't necessarily want the steamy side mm-hmm. of it. And these are, I have people wonder all the time why they're so popular, because mm-hmm. it seems like such a niche, but there's a huge group of people that are looking for what these give. So
yeah, that sounds, I would love to read that. That sounds like totally a romance I would read.
Yeah, I think you would like it.
Yeah.
So that's The Lopsided Christmas Cake by Wanda E. Brunstetter and Jean Brunstetter.
My last one is Winter Solstice by Rosamund Pilcher. And this is about a group of people, and sort of the person that draws them all together is named Elfrida Phipps, who is a woman after a successful career as an actress has decided to retire in a tiny village in England. And when she is there, she befriends a couple named Oscar and Gloria and their daughter. And the Oscar and Gloria and their daughter live in a house that is owned by Gloria's family. And there is an accident, and Gloria and their daughter die. And so Oscar is alone, and he is forced to move out of this house because the Gloria's family says, "We're going to sell it. We want the money. You have to leave." So he is grieving and devastated and doesn't know what to do. So Elfrida says, she convinces him to go back to his childhood home in Scotland, where he can live in the estate manager's house of his grandmother's estate, which is now a hotel. And she says, "You know, I'll go with you. I'll take care of the arrangements and everything, but this is a place that you can go." So the two of them go there together. Really what Oscar wants is just to escape any of the cheerfulness of Christmas or the holidays and all the memories that brings up, because he's still in such a state of grieving. And then at the same time, a distant relative of Elfrida is looking for a place to spend Christmas after her own recent events in her life that have left her sad and devastated. And so Elfrida invites her to come, and she also brings her 14-year-old niece, who has been neglected by her mother. So you can see we're bringing together people that all have some things that happening in life, that the feeling isolated and alone. And then once they're all gathered, a handsome single man named Sam shows up and needing a place to stay. So of course they invite him in. And then what happens from there is they're all together and learning about each other. And this is one of those books that it just is so, like we talked about why we like Christmas books, because they're heartwarming and kind of cozy. This just defines coziness. You know, it's all cold and snowy outside, and there's this group of people that have been brought together who are basically strangers to each other, getting to know each other. And it's really sweet. And just you get the warm fuzzies. Like, that's the only way to describe this book is just the warm fuzzies. And you said about another book earlier, it's sweet but not saccharine. And that's really how I felt about this, is there's a real sweetness to the story and the way it plays out, but you never feel like it's manipulative or just sweet for the sake of being sweet. Like, it's very believable. It's very poignant because there's some loss there that people are overcoming, and past that people are trying to move on from. And I just love it. I've read a lot of Rosamund Pilcher in my life, and she's an author I really liked. Unfortunately, she's passed away, so she doesn't write anymore. But that's Winter Solstice by Rosamund Pilcher. All right, we'll be right back with what we're reading this week. Tell me what you're reading this week, Anne.
This is not a feel-good book, so unfortunately it doesn't really fit with the rest of our theme. Yeah, it's called Dead Ringer by Jesse Rosen, and I think it's a YA book. It takes place in high school, but it's a psychological suspense book, which you don't see as often in YA. So I think it has good appeal to all ages. Mm-hmm. It's about a student named Laura who is new at her high school. She's just moved from California to New Jersey with her parents. And from the moment she walks into school, people start whispering and they're giving her really weird looks. And so she goes throughout her first day not knowing what's going on. And she finally is told, I think maybe the first day, maybe the second day, that she looks just like a girl at school named Sarah who had committed suicide 2 years earlier. So the school had kind of, it was something that everyone remembered but never talked about. And so having this new girl show up suddenly has brought up all these new memories, and they're sort of rehashing all of the events that happened. And so in class, Laura meets a guy named Charlie, and he is the most popular guy in school. And they start out as friends, and he's being really friendly to her since she's the new girl. And then they start to be romantically interested in each other. But Charlie and his friends have a secret, and they know more about Sarah's suicide than they've ever told anyone. So there's also someone at the same time, the story is told from multiple perspectives, and so you're getting all these different takes on the events that are going on. There's also someone who is anonymously releasing bits of information about Sarah's relationship with Charlie and his friends to the media and to the school newspaper and just generally online. And so all of the stress of not knowing what is going to come out is starting to make Charlie crack. And I haven't finished it yet, but I like how the information is teased to the reader. I feel like there are lots of little bits of information and lots of little clues that are being given to me. And I think at the end it will all fit together really nicely. That's just the impression that I get from it so far. And psychological suspense is, I think, like the hit genre right now because of Gone Girl and The Girl on the Train. So it's really cool to see something like this cross over into YA, because what is popular in YA right now is realistic fiction. Right. And so you don't see this type of book written as often. And it's so far very sort of creepy and unsettling, but in sort of a lighter way than your typical adult books would be. So it's a little bit more user-friendly, I think. And it's called Dead Ringer by Jesse Rosen.
That sounds good. And I'm reading A Spool of Blue Thread by Ann Tyler, and it doesn't really go with a theme either, sorry. It is about Red and Abby Witshank, who are in their 70s, and they have four grown children, and three of the four are successful, responsible adults, but then there's Denny, who is one of the four children, and he's always taken up most of their attention. As a teenager, he and his girlfriend had a baby, and then later he announced he was gay, but then later he said no, he wasn't. Or actually, I don't think he ever actually said it. It was just he then started showing up with women. So he's always been sort of like an attention grabber. You know, he's just always been the center of attention of the family. Everybody else has had to sort of make do and make their way on their own. And he's just sucked up a lot of the attention. He also has a habit of being in their lives for a while, and then something will happen that makes him angry or offends him in some way. And so he will not speak to anybody and disappear from their lives for months or years. And so they never know quite where they stand with him. And the family kind of is always aware of Denny, you know, where if he's in their lives or not in their lives, it's just it kind of revolves around Denny. So the family is all brought back together by two health crises. Red has a mild heart attack, and Abby is having episodes of forgetfulness and sort of not being places that she doesn't recall how she got there. So it's some concerning things going on. And so their youngest son and his wife and their children decide to move in to help them out and live in their house with them. But at the same time, Denny shows up, and surprise, he's going to help. He wants to help too. And so suddenly that Red and Abby had been living on their own for years and years and years, and now they have this full house of people. I don't know if you've ever read Anne Tyler, but she has a real knack for not quirky characters, I won't say, because they're very realistic characters, but sort of the quirks that make up your any person, the eccentricities that any family has. And she's really good at laying out interactions between family members and the way there are shared memories and kind of shared hurts and shared hard feelings and good feelings, and all those things are wrapped up in a family. And it's really real and sharply observed, I think. And she just has a way of writing it. And again, in a very uncomplicated, kind of simple way, but very...
like you're aware that they have a history.
Right. Like, yeah, without a whole lot of excess description, mm-hmm. she really lays a foundation for these are, you feel like they're real people
yeah.
going through real things. So I'm really, really enjoy it. I've gotten away from reading her for a little while. And then this book came out in the last year and I picked it up and I just like her and I like her writing. And that is A Spool of Blue Thread by Anne Tyler. All right. Should we go back and mention what we talked about today?
Yes, please. I talked about Blue Christmas by Mary Kay Andrews, My True Love Gave to Me, which is edited by Stephanie Perkins, The Lopsided Christmas Cake by Wanda E. Brunstetter and Jean Brunstetter, and what I'm reading this week is Dead Ringer by Jesse Rosen.
And I talked about The Best Christmas Pageant Ever by Barbara Robinson, I Am Half Sick of Shadows by Alan Bradley, Winter Solstice by Rosamund Pilcher, and A Spool of Blue Thread by Anne Tyler. If you want to get in touch with us or to give us feedback or a suggestion on a topic you'd like us to discuss, you can email us at wellreadpod@gmail.com or reach us on Twitter at wellreadpodcast. Please rate and review us on iTunes or your other podcast provider of choice. Our podcast is engineered by Adam Farber. Our theme music is Kitten by Poddington Bear. We keep our show notes at beaufortcountylibrary.org/wellread, where you can find a listing of every book we talked about in this episode. If you'd like a book recommendation list tailored specifically for you, please go to beaufortcountylibrary.org/mynextbook and take a brief survey on what type of books you like. You will need a Beaufort County Library card in order to use this service. And thank you all for listening. Happy reading and happy holidays.
Happy holidays.